And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
You may not know this, but you're one of the largest landowners in the world. That's true even if you don't own your own home. You see, if you're a citizen of the United States, you are one of the owners of over 600 million acres of public lands. That comes to 2 acres for every one of the 302,857,725 people in the United States alive today. You own and have access to over one-third of all the land in the United States. Every time you visit a national, state, or local park, you are on your land. And as any landowner knows, with ownership comes responsibility. Today, we remind you that in 2 weeks, it's time to help maintain your property. It's National Public Lands Day, when your voice of the earth continues, here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
We've got so much to be proud of in America. Much of it comes from the inheritance of greatness that was born with the birth of America. A government of, by, and for the people has served us well for hundreds of years. We seem to struggle each day right now, it seems, to see if we'll be able to survive the next 100 years. This concept of the common good, the common will, was also expressed in the common lands. And whether we know it or not, we are blessed each day by our public lands. Many are well known, our legacy of protecting our greatest wonders enshrined in our national parks. We've added seashores, national wildlife refuges, wilderness areas, national forests and monuments, lakes and seashores, caves, marine sanctuaries, historic sites, and scenic trails, grasslands, and even now, vistas. Some argue that far too much of our land is held in trust and would be better off turned over to development and more profitable use. But this we know, that once we divest ourselves of our public lands, they will never be returned to the people. We can discuss the values of public lands at another time. And there are some interesting trends that we'll be talking about soon in the designation of wilderness areas. But today, we want to talk about the 2007 National Public Lands Day events coming up September 29th. In segment 2 of today's show, we'll be talking with a few of the people who are organizing one of the nation's largest volunteer efforts that each year brings over 100,000 people out to help maintain and study and learn about and enjoy their public lands, your public lands. That will be preceded by the Nature News, but now it's time for the Weekly Earth Summit. Welcome to the Weekly Earth Summit, the most important 15 minutes on Earth. I'm your host, Sydney Wildsmith, and I have a special announcement about our future Weekly Earth Summits. I'm opening up participation here at the microphone to you, all of you who listen and have thoughts, ideas, events to talk about, and observations that you'd like to share. We try to limit each speaker to not more than 3 minutes, so at the end of today's briefing, I'll tell you how to contact me to share your voice on the Weekly Earth Summit. I look forward to hearing from you. So let's get started with today's Weekly Earth Summit. Reports keep coming in that confirm that we're witnessing a serious increase in the number of species that are becoming extinct or face extinction. A report this week talked about the effect the Ebola virus is having on the gorilla populations. These are very serious times for some of the world's most extraordinary creatures. Now, Jeff Miller of the Center for Biological Diversity adds a personal perspective on the increasing number of endangered species. Jeff?
The message I always give people is, you know, I'm often asked, you know, we advocate for a lot of the unloved and unknown species. That's kind of been our trademark. I mean, you know, beetles and butterflies and coral species and, you know, some very obscure species, but that are important nonetheless and that are indicative of you know, their decline is indicative of problems with the health of ecosystems. And people often ask, well, why should I care if, you know, one little subspecies of frog goes extinct or if that lizard is no longer around? And, you know, ultimately it gets down to, you know, it's a moral and a philosophical issue, which is, you know, we humans are responsible for the changes in the habitat degradation that is driving these species extinct, and I think we have an obligation to do everything we can to protect these species and prevent them from going extinct. But just on a selfish worldview, you know, these species are the canary in the coal mine, and you know, when something starts to happen, you know, for example, a third of the world's amphibian species are in danger of extinction, and the extinctions are happening incredibly quickly, and that should be cause for concern for us, and essentially, ultimately, we're in line for the same fate if we don't make sure we have a healthy functioning planet.
Thanks, Jeff. Dave Foreman also weighs in on the issue of the disappearance of the wild. Dave?
For over 25 centuries, the written record carries descriptions of damage wrought by too many people, and the worries of wise people about the consequences of human population growth. I think a careful search would find such writings even earlier. Had we the tools and could find the artifacts, we might find like descriptions and worries another 15 or more centuries back, even into the Neolithic, certainly so in the New World. Consequences of human overpopulation during both historic and prehistoric times can be sorted into five kinds. 1, land abuse and loss of productivity. 2, depletion of necessary natural resources and conflict over obtaining new sources. 3, inability to grow enough food, leading to hunger and famine. 4, social, economic, and security crises and threats leading to warfare and intergroup strife. 5, harm to wild nature, including extinction of species. Only 10 years ago, when the Wildlands Project began to look at the kinds of ecological wounds causing mass extinction, we didn't see global heating as a big enough deal for it to be one of the wounds. Unbelievable levels of extinction were happening because of direct killing, habitat destruction, fragmentation, loss of evolutionary and ecological processes, invasion by exotic species and diseases, and biocide pollution. But now, we know that the greenhouse effect may become the major cause of species extinction in the coming century. This knowledge has rocked me back on my heels. It has smacked me in the face like a meteor out of the dark. In some ways, it is too hellish to behold. But it is the real world, muchachos, and we are in it. We need to speak out loud and clear as conservationists that it is the human population explosion that has driven industrialization the last 200 years, thereby causing the greenhouse effect. And as conservationists, we must be loud and clear that the human population explosion and catastrophic global heating will cause mass extinction.
Dave is a co-founder of the Rewilding Institute. Carl Pope, president of the Sierra Club, is noting certain disappearances as well and shares his take on our future. Carl?
Well, Karl Rove is gone. Attorney General Gonzalez, Gail Norton too. But much as environmentalists welcome their departure, there's much less solace than you might think. Our biggest problem remains. Vice President Cheney has driven the administration's war on the land and water. He forced out Christy Todd Whitman at EPA, sold out salmon fishermen on the Klamath River, blocked efforts to modernize America's electrical grid. Rove may have come up with the cute names, healthy forests and clear skies, but Cheney wrote the policies. And he's still doing it. Even as public opinion numbers for the administration collapse, congressional Republicans become restive, and federal courts repeatedly slap the administration down, Dick is staying the course. The BLM recently proposed to increase old-growth logging sevenfold. New forest rules suggest that Cheney thinks the national forests themselves are an undisclosed secret location, which has to be kept a secret from the American people. Republican hunters and anglers in Wyoming had to sue to protect their wild lands from thousands of new oil and gas leases. A year after Katrina, the Army Corps of Engineers still won't protect the wetlands, their New Orleans' true security. It took a congressional hearing to get FEMA to stop selling toxic trailers to poison unknowing families. The federal courts and Congress are going to be very busy now that Dick Cheney stands alone.
Thanks, Carl. The science of animal behavior is reaching new levels of perception that advance the scientific basis for caring for animals, which share this earth with we human species. Ethologist and author Dr. Mark Beckhoff brings us up to date on recent discoveries that speak to this issue. Dr. Beckhoff.
There was an essay in Time magazine back in January, which was, you know, basically one of the clearest reviews of what we're learning in neurobiology and behavior. They said that mirror neurons will do for psychology what DNA did for molecular biology. And what they were saying was that it's very important to recognize that there are ways now where animals can share emotions and share intention. So the way it might work would be, when I do a play bow, my play bow neurons fire, and I know what I feel. When you do a play bow, my mirror neurons for play bow fire, and I have an idea of what you feel and what you want. There's a sharing of intention. There's this knowledge of what's in your head. And so, once again, when I say I can feel the pain of a dog, I can. And it's probably mediated by some system like mirror neurons. If I say I feel your pain, I feel your joy, I feel your grief, there's a neural or material basis. So what the discovery of mirror neurons has done across the board is it's really taken into the realm of science the notion of empathy, the sharing of feelings. These mirror neurons are sort of portals of empathy. That's really a great way to put it. That's, of course, what probably underlies the empathy in mice. So, you know, once again, if we have mirror neurons and great apes have mirror neurons and monkeys have mirror neurons, so do dogs, cats, and rats have a functional equivalent, just like the spindle cells that were thought to be only in humans and great apes are now for sure in whales, and I'll bet you if we look for them in other species, we'll find them.
Thanks, Dr. Beckhoff. It's no secret that we are in the throes of change on the Earth. Over the past 40 or so years, we achieved the modern age, which allows us to enjoy the literal fruits and vegetables of our labors and the labors of others from all over the planet. But this benefit of globalization has its downside. Brita Belli, managing editor of E! Magazine, shares her perspective on the importance of locally grown food. Brita?
Most of our food that we see now in the supermarkets is coming from all over the world. And the average produce that we would purchase travels between 1,500 and 2,500 miles to reach us. And so, I mean, I think that's something that we have to start thinking seriously about is this a system that we want to support? It especially becomes a bit bizarre when we have the same produce that could easily be grown in our own communities or be purchased in our own communities, and we're instead buying it from, you know, it's been shipped from South America, it's been shipped from Chile, you know. It is something I think consumers have to begin to think about is sort of the global repercussions of these choices. The majority of Midwest farms today are devoted to corn and soybeans, and a lot of our products are that we see, you know, all these kind of packaged foods and processed foods are made with corn syrup and partially hydrogenated corn oil and all this. We've kind of become a corn-based economy here, and instead are importing a lot of our other fresh produce and fruits and vegetables. This model has just become very heavily established, and it's going to be very difficult for us to really change that and to go back to small farming and to support small farms. But I think that's the impetus here, is that it's possible to start choosing local food again and to start supporting small farmers so that that can be a real part of the economy again.
Thanks, Brita. And now it's your chance to join us here at the podium to share your thoughts. We're expanding the speakers list to include all of you who are working, researching, directing, and writing about issues relevant to the future of life on Earth. The magic of the weekly Earth Summit comes from the combining of different thoughts and topics into this timely and articulate update on the planet. If you have something to share here on the weekly Earth Summit, I invite you to contact me by email. Include your name and phone number, and I'll pick up the phone and call you. You don't even have to summarize what it is you want to talk about. That's often the stumbling block that keeps people from actually doing something. When I get your email, I'll call you and we'll talk. And if it seems relevant to this forum, we'll set up a time for me to record you by phone. I have a way of pulling information out of people, so don't feel you need to finally craft your message. But of course, if you feel more comfortable, you can have it written down. I try to limit each speaker's comments to no more than 3 minutes, which is actually plenty of time to share your thoughts. So I'm inviting you to send an email to me with your name and phone number. That's all it takes. Send it to wildsidenews@cox.net. That's WILDSIDENEWS at COX.net. You can be part of the Voice of the Earth here on the Weekly Earth Summit. In just a moment, we fill you in on the upcoming National Public Lands Day and how you can be part of one of the nation's largest volunteer events. That's all coming up when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News.
I'm getting a catcher's mitt.
I'm getting ice skates.
I'm getting a jigsaw puzzle.
I'm getting dying coral reefs.
A blue bicycle.
A walkie-talkie.
I'm getting a severe drought.
Cool black skateboard.
I'm getting melted ice caps.
A killer heat wave.
A shrinking glacier.
I'm getting a devastating flood.
Adults are generous. We're even giving kids global warming. But it's not too late. We can still reduce greenhouse gas pollution. Go to fightglobalwarming.com. Brought to you by Environmental Defense, the Robertson Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Ready to get down and dirty to help keep America beautiful? Bring family and friends out to clean and restore America's parks, rivers, and trails on National Public Lands Day, Saturday, September 29th. Meet up with over 100,000 volunteers coast to coast and lend your helping hands for America's lands. Make it a date. For information on volunteer efforts in your area, visit www.publiclandsday.org. A message from the National Environmental Education Foundation.